I have learned that there are plenty of great ways to preserve and purify water in your garden. And whether it be a rain garden or a curb cut garden, creating a sustainable garden can help keep your local water sources clean. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. My next guest, Pam Pennick, is a garden designer, and she's author of the book, The Water Saving Garden, the subtitle, How to Grow a Gorgeous Garden with a Lot Less Water. And so she'll be talking about how you can preserve, conserve, and clean water in your very own backyard. We'll also talk about how you can save and recycle water in your garden through things like cisterns and water-friendly paving. You may be planning to build a rain garden in your yard. Maybe you want to save water in your garden. Questions, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have an experience to share of your own in this area. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or go ahead and post. Maybe you've got a photo of some thing that you've done in this area. We'd love to see that. Up on our Facebook page, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your photo there, and you can also ask a question there as well. So love to hear from you. And Pam Pennick is joining us by phone. Pam, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
I'm really happy to be here, Larry. Thanks for having me.
So rainwater can benefit your yard and your water supply, you say?
It can, yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, it's free. It's free. I mean, it's like falling from the sky. And, you know, especially here in Austin where I'm from, it really looks like dollar signs when it comes down. So that's the greatest thing about it. And secondly, even if you have plenty of water, it's nice to have pure water. And rainwater is much purer, of course, than the water that comes out of our tap. And you can collect it and hold it for when you need it and save money that way. And you can also keep it out of the storm drains, which has a whole bunch of benefits.
Yeah, and plants can purify rainwater and keep that runoff clean.
They can, yeah. Plant roots are amazing at filtering out pollutants as the water seeps into the soil. And that's one of the huge advantages of keeping rainwater on your property, is not just that you save money and you can use that water when you need it, but also it helps the environment because it does clean the water that would otherwise maybe, you know, sheet across your lawn or your driveway and down into the storm drains, picking up pollutants as it goes.
And so why do plants prefer rainwater to tap water? You see that all the time. Is it the salts in the tap water or what?
Yeah, there's sodium, there's softeners, depending on whether your water is hard or soft. You know, municipalities treat it with various things. There's chlorine and fluoride and various things in the water that are all designed to make it safe for us to drink and you know, keep things that are in the water from hurting us. But plants don't always appreciate those added ingredients, and it can cause, you know, harmful mineral buildups in your soil, especially in potted plants, if you have a lot of container plants. So rainwater doesn't have any of that, and plants really respond to it much better.
I know I want to talk with you about rain gardens, and James in Chicago, Illinois, is with us and has a question, so let's go there. Hi, James. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've been involved with rain gardens for a long time. In the project that I've worked on, we have a historic home. It's an area in Sauganash, which is the northwest side of Chicago, and I collected cobblestones from the city streets, working out in the street, and installed a 1,700 square foot driveway using 5,000 stones. Some are from Baraboo, Wisconsin, Baraboo quartzite. And we went down about 2 feet, put large stone in, gravel, and then put these stones on top. Also, I eliminated the grass in front of the house. I just have a little bit left, and established a rain garden from the runoff from the roof of the house and even in the parkway. And I found that we did this project last year with the driveway, and I found that when it rains or when there's snow on it and the snow melts, no ice forms because the water goes between the stones into the gravel substrate. And basically, there's no runoff from my home at all to the street. And the garden just with the rain barrels and everything has just been fantastic. And I find it interesting because all my neighbors have professional landscapers that make all that noise and everything. And there's no noise at my house because what little grass I have, I use a push mower. And I have Blazing Star, May apples, Jack in the Pulpit, all the prairie plants growing in the parkway. And there's a preschool nearby, and I tell them, just pick the flowers because I have so many flowers. And it's self-sustaining, and at some point, I'm planning on doing some other work, renovating, well, adding onto the house, and I got a good southern exposure, and I want to get those slate shingles, solar shingles, from Musk, and be a totally green home. So it's been a very long project for me.
Pam Pettick, James sounds like your kind of guy.
He does. I was just thinking that I really want to be his neighbor.
Yeah.
It sounds like a gorgeous landscape, and I love the idea that he mentioned, too, of it being quiet. Because, yeah, he's eliminated that grass, so he doesn't have the mowers and the blowers going all the time. That sounds like heaven.
Oh, thank you, James. If you've got some photos, post them up on our Facebook page, will you? I'd love to see.
Okay, we'll do that.
All right, thank you so much. Appreciate that call very, very much. Well, we can talk about rain gardens, and I wanted to mention curb cut gardens. You've got some in your book, by the way. You've got some wonderful photos that really help explain all the various things you're talking about in your book, including the curb cut gardens. Talk a little bit about what is a curb cut garden.
Sure, yeah. Curb cut gardens were kind of new to me when I started writing the book, but the more I researched, the more I learned about how cities across the country are incorporating these, and some homeowners too. So a curb cut garden is what it sounds like. It's cutting a piece of the curb out from the front of your house and allowing water that would be flowing down the street toward a storm drain to then flow into a rain garden along your curb. So you would be excavating a little bit of a depression, you know, in the section along your curb so that when the water flows in, it can go into those plants and soak in instead of heading off down the storm drain. So some cities have allowed homeowners to do this either with a fee for the curb cut or even on their own, like Tucson, Arizona is one example. And that was thanks to a local activist there who really was touting the benefits of, stopping runoff from just filling up the storm drains and carrying in the pollutants and oftentimes overwhelming city storm drains so that, repair work has to be done. And instead allowing that water to flow into a homeowner's garden and possibly, you know, feed plants for wildlife or fruit trees or that sort of thing. And there are cities in Wisconsin too, I noticed, that are doing this. And if you look online, you can find out more information about it. So it's just a really smart way of preserving rainwater that would otherwise go to waste.
Yeah, it seems to me that curb cut gardens obviously different from rain gardens, but they can work in consort.
You bet. I mean, it's kind of a similar concept because the rain garden is a garden that collects runoff from your property, from your house, from your driveway, and holds it for a little while. And a curb cut garden does the same thing, but instead of getting water that's coming off your lawn or off your roof, it's collecting water that's already flowing down the street, and it's bringing it back into your property instead of keeping it from leaving the property. So it's kind of a directional thing too. But cities are often incorporating these curb cut gardens as part of their green street initiatives because, we have these urban heat islands from overpaving, and cities get hotter and hotter from all the paving. And this is a way to bring some greenery back in to help cool the cities down. It brings wildlife back into the cities. Again, it stops that the storm drains from being overwhelmed. There's a lot of great reasons to do it. And so a lot of cities are incorporating these into their streets.
And, houses, typically you're building a house. It's built to help run water off the property.
Yep. So that's traditionally the model is, build the house, get the water away from the house as fast as you can and out to the storm drains. But now when we've kind of flipped that model and we're thinking about it differently because we do have these built-up areas and the storm drains get overwhelmed and our waterways get polluted. So now people are thinking about how to keep the water on your property, how to make each property, you know, each person with their own yard can do so much to benefit the larger environment around them. And keeping your water on your property is one of those ways.
Yeah.
And it can, like again, save money, help clean the water that's flowing off your property, and bring in a lot of cool plants and wildlife that appreciate those plants, so that you have these wildlife corridors that can take advantage of these new gardens.
Yeah, and you've got some wonderful examples of all of this. In your book, The Water Saving Garden, for sure. And we're going to have plenty of time to talk with Pam Pennick. She's a garden designer, and she's the author of the book, The Water Saving Garden. And you can join in with your own questions or comments. James in Chicago had a great one. I bet you've got one, too. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. We'll be back with our guest right after the news. Stay with us. Gardens offer us beautiful scenery, of course, but they can also help purify your water. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Today we're talking to guest Pam Pennick, a garden designer and author of the book The Water Saving Garden. We'll talk about how you can design your garden to help purify your local water sources and also ways to save water in your garden. How do you conserve water in your garden? I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And before we go to the phones again, Pam, maybe you can talk about how your book is organized. I like it, as a matter of fact. I like how you've got it organized.
Thank you. Well, I start off with kind of a garden tour approach where you can see several gardens from different parts of the country and how they treat the water issues that they encounter, whether it's in a rainier part of the country like Portland, Oregon, or drier parts of the country like Phoenix, Arizona. It's just a nice exploration of all the different ways you can have a beautiful garden depending on the conditions in your region and the water issues that you have. And then I move on to talking about practical ways to hold on to water, through rain barrels and cisterns and small earth-moving projects in your garden to help hold water on your site. And even things like putting up some shade structures, arbors, that sort of thing, which give plants some essential shade as well as people. And then I move on to a planting section where you can talk about ways to make your garden more water thrifty by getting rid of large sections of lawn and what you can do instead of lawn, using native plants, which are usually very well adapted to your local conditions, and different ways that you can organize your garden so that you can plant plants with similar water needs together, which I call ripple zone planting. And also ways to save water in a container or balcony garden if that's your gardening situation, how you can be water thrifty in those conditions. And then the final section is the one that most diehard gardeners like the best. It's very creative. It's about ways of creating the illusion of water without using much water, whether that's through plant choice or creative use of stone or glass in your garden. And it's just kind of a playful, fun way to create this feeling of lush, watery abundance in your garden without actually using much water.
Yeah, it's a fun section for sure, but all of them work together very well. Richard in Madison has something for us. I want to go there. Richard, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. I'd just like to make a pitch for those of us who live in the Wingrow watershed. We have already installed those cutout curbs and rain gardens throughout the Wingrow watershed from Regent Street all the way down to help alleviate the problem of pollution in Lake Wingrow. And also, I think one of the reasons that rainwater is so effective is that it's slightly acidic, and plants love water that has pH lower than 7.
Yeah. So, Pam Pennick, what do you think?
I think it sounds like he's got a great system going on for his street. I mean, all the things that he's talking about, that's exactly what curb cut gardens and rain gardens can do. And it really heartens me to hear about people doing these on that's a residential street, right, Richard?
Yes, it is. And and it borders pretty much a small lake. And, you know, small lakes can be easily damaged or quickly.
They can, yeah.
Quickly damaged, I should say.
Yeah, you bet. And so, yeah, that really is probably helping the lake water and bringing wildlife back, too. So sounds great.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard, for calling. John from Pewaukee emailed to say that he put native prairie plants in his front yard instead of a lawn, and there's almost no runoff after rain. He also mentions the other benefits. You get a diversity of pollinators. You know, you're not applying chemicals. You don't have to water. And you get a beautiful garden if you do it right.
You do. That was one of the first things that came to my mind is he's probably enjoying beautiful flowers and grasses through the season and seeing birds and butterflies and bees come to his garden. And, you know, that's one of the great joys of gardening is seeing that kind of life come to your yard. And a lawn really can't give you that. So I don't demonize lawns. I think there's a place for them, but it's nice to pare back the lawn and really just use it where you need it and put other kinds of gardens that can conserve rainwater and bring wildlife to your yard in other spots.
I was trying to remember one of your sections. The title was something like Irrigation Without Irritation. So there are times.
That's right, yeah.
And you need to, there are times to where you need to irrigate, but doing it without irritation, you might comment on that.
Well, you know, most people don't enjoy the process of hauling hoses around, and every type of irrigation that you put in, even the most water thrifty, like drip irrigation, has its challenges. I mean, if you live in an area with gophers, they like to chew holes in them, and you know, you might hit it with your shovel. So anytime you have to add water to your garden, it involves an element of irritation, and I was trying to acknowledge that in a playful way. But for sure, there are more efficient ways to irrigate, and that's a huge part of creating a water-saving garden. I do talk about it in that section, and depending on the kind of garden that you have, you know, you can use soaker hoses. For sure, you can put things like that on timers so that you don't accidentally, you know, turn on your hose or your sprinkler system and forget to turn it off. I mean, that's such a frustrating way to waste water if you're trying to water. And if you have a large cistern, you can also hook that up to a pump and use the rainwater to operate a sprinkler. You know, if you have a big enough cistern and you have a pump on it, you can use that. So there's all sorts of ways to become more efficient at irrigating when you have to. And, of course, the first step is to plant plants that need a lot less water from you. But when you do have to water, think of ways to make that a much more efficient process.
And just to go along with what you were commenting on here, I've got a note from a Mark in Richfield. He wants to collect rainwater on his lot, and you sort of got at this a little bit. He's wondering how he can get water out of the collection tank. Should he use a pump, or do you just use watering cans and legwork? Are there other options?
Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on the size of the tank. For a lot of people, when you say rain barrel, you think of one. I'm trying to think how many gallons they hold. Oftentimes, cities will sell these, or you'll see them in gardening catalogs, and they're fairly small. You know, they're about waist high, and they fit under a downspout. You don't usually, you know, put a pump on a rain tank that size. It's just not big enough. Those do work great, though, for if you have an overflow valve and you have a little hose hooked up to it. You could run that to a tree that needed some extra water, a tree that you're getting established, maybe a fruit tree or something like that. Or like on my patio garden, I use a little rain tank like that to fill up my watering can, and then I use it to water all my potted plants, so I don't have to turn on the hose for those.
Yeah.
So those are for real simple watering projects. But if you put in a bigger, what I usually call cisterns, a bigger watering tank, those are hooked up to pumps. And then you can hook up multiple tanks to each other also and collect even more water. And then you can run the water out to a hose. Don't just rely on the gravity feed, but actually hook up the pump to it and run a sprinkler system. So just, you know, it depends on, I mean, it, you can go crazy with these things. You can hook up a bunch of tanks to each other. You can calculate how much water comes off your roof. I've got the formula for that in my book. You can find it online as well. Figure out your annual rainfall in inches and how much rain comes off your roof in inches and really be systematic about it if you have a scientific bent and collect as much rainwater as you can. So there's, you know, just I always say every little bit of collected rainwater helps. If you really want to get serious about it, you can do that too.
Yeah, it sounds great. And it sounds like kind of it'd be a fun little project, wouldn't it? I think so.
Do the
math.
It's satisfying.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Stella. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. We've been harvesting. My husband, a number of years ago, built a greenhouse addition on the back of our garage. And when we poured the foundation, we lined it with a pond liner, and we have a 3,000-gallon cistern under the floor of the greenhouse. And we combined that with 16 55-gallon rain barrels around the house, strategically placed. So basically, we're harvesting all of the rain that falls on our house.
Wow.
And on our roof. And then he also has built four very large, 4 foot wide by 40 foot long and 2 foot high planters, raised beds for our garden in the backyard. And we lined them with pond liner and then filled them two-thirds full with sand, and the top third is the garden soil that we removed in order to build the boxes, supplemented with, we have chickens, and during the winter we use a deep litter bedding, and they get it all pooped up, and then we compost that for a year and use that for amendment and for starting plants in the greenhouse. And these large planters, we have an overflow valve at each end in case they get too much water in them. But basically, they function as gigantic self-watering pots. And
nice.
And we do bury a drip hose in the beds in case sometimes we run into a long drought period in the summer. And we have many times actually used up all of the rainwater that we've harvested and had to resort to city water, but we can irrigate the raised beds with the drip irrigation under a heavy mulch if need be, but basically they just water themselves all summer long on the rain that falls on them.
Oh man.
That is fantastic. What a great system.
Yeah. It really works beautifully.
Well,
they must be very productive beds as well.
Yeah, they are, and we're planning to convert the rest of the garden to them. We finally figured out a way. We do a hoop house where we plant the warm weather crops, and excuse me, and we finally figured out a way to do the hoop house over two of the raised beds. That was kind of holding us up on converting the rest of the garden to the raised beds.
Wow. Stella, I hope you're going to start a website and, like, describe your whole process, because that sounds like that would be very inspirational to a lot of people.
That's for sure. At the least, shoot a couple of photos up on our Facebook page, because I'd love to see them.
We're not on Facebook.
Well, you don't have to be on Facebook to go to my site. So you can go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the Facebook page.
Yeah,
not have to be a member.
That's right. You can look at it, but I don't think you can post on it.
You can't post on it. No, that's true.
Right.
Thank you. You can't post photos. Thank you very much for calling. Well, we've got some pretty creative people here in Wisconsin.
You have some serious water savers out there.
That is for sure. I was going to ask you about berms. I kind of like the look of berms in a garden. Can they be useful?
Very, yeah. There's different reasons to put in berms. Sometimes people like to, you know, maybe they have kind of boggy conditions in their yard and they like to grow plants that really want drier conditions. And so they put in a berm, a large garden berm, so that they can get plants the drainage they need. That can be fun for people who like to grow a variety of plants and want to experiment with different kinds of plants and not just put the plants in that want the existing conditions. So, you know, for real avid gardeners, that can be a fun thing. But they're also great in terms of holding water on your property, because if you, you know, mound soil in an appropriate place, you can keep water from just sheeting off your lawn. You can curve them slightly uphill. I always describe this as like imagine arms reaching out to embrace the water. You know, if you have a slight slope, and you can lose a lot of water off your property, even with a lawn. You know, you think, well, it all just soaks into the lawn, but actually, on a slope, a lot of water just sheets off a lawn, especially if it's been dry for a while, and that soil becomes like a dried out sponge. And it doesn't have the ability to soak up that water until it's, you know, been wet for a while. But with a slope, the water just keeps running off, so it can't soak in. So you can use berms or even, you know, small piles of stones to make check dams, which is basically just checking the flow of water. It's slowing that water down so that it doesn't just shoot off your lot. And then you can plant you know, appropriate plants around those berms and check dams so that they're not so visible. A lot of people might worry about how it would look once you've done this to your property. But once you've planted around it, they kind of blend into the background. And we're only talking about, you know, like a 6 to 12-inch berm to slow the water across the flow of your property. So they can be really effective and, you know, help you in holding that water on your property.
Yeah, and I'm thinking sort of the opposite. Paving, can paving really negatively, or are there ways to positively affect water absorption
mm-hmm,
in your...
Oh, it can do both. Right, yeah. You know, a lot of us, you know, when you buy a house or you build a house, you get a concrete or an asphalt driveway, and those are great, and they're very affordable, but they also don't allow any rainwater to soak in and you know, add to that the footprint of your house and any paved patio spaces that you have, and suddenly your property isn't as much of a water-absorbing sponge as you would like it to be. These non-permeable spaces, just the water just has to flow off and go somewhere, and oftentimes that's out to the street. So if you can, when you're building or when you're replacing paved areas, think about incorporating permeable paving. That's a great way to help keep water on your property. And that can be something as simple as just a gravel patio. You know, gravel is one of the more inexpensive paving materials you can use, and if you choose a gravel that's quarried in your area, it fits in. It looks like it belongs, and that keeps it more affordable as well because they don't have to bring it in a long distance. So gravel is one of the simple ones. You can also use paving stones and put maybe bigger grout spaces in between. And instead of using concrete to grout that patio, you would use, paving sand or decomposed granite. That's a popular material here in Texas where I live. Or, you know, whatever kind of gritty material would be used to fill in the gaps in a patio space. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to... Jake from Madison wanted to go back to rain barrels for a minute. He wondered about the concern about mosquitoes being attracted to the rain barrels, or do you use a kind of a closed system?
Absolutely. I definitely recommend keeping mosquitoes out of there. You know, mosquitoes carry diseases, and, well, they're just a nuisance. So you want to have either a screened lid, and a lot of the rain barrels that you purchase ready-made come with screened lids, and you just keep those on top, and the rain comes down the downspout and can go through the screening into the rain tank, but the mosquitoes can't get in there to lay their eggs. If you do have an open tank of some kind, you can always put mosquito dunks in there. That's an organic mosquito control that keeps mosquitoes from developing from the larva stage into the adult stage. But I really, for safety reasons, especially where kids are concerned, I recommend having a secure lid on top that a kid just can't explore and get into in any way.
Yeah.
So usually when you buy pre-purchased ones, they have a built-in, like, heavy-duty plastic grid that a child could not fit into, and then the screening lid goes on top, or they have a completely contained lid system with just a hole big enough for the downspout to go into. So that keeps it safe. And then, of course, you want to secure your rain barrel against your house and make sure it's on a very firm, solid foundation and that it can't be tilted over or tipped in any way.
Yeah. Mike in Belleville has a question for you. Let's go there. Mike, hello.
Hi. I have a question for your guest speaker. I live in a municipality that has an ordinance against cisterns, rain collection, and rain gardens for residential areas. How would you combat that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one. Yeah, that sounds like Colorado. I know there are certain states that that don't allow the collection of rainwater. It's considered the property of the state. So if they don't allow rain gardens either, there's kind of little you can do that's legal. I'm not really sure what the answer would be, other than planting appropriately and, you know, just inserting berms into your garden that could help direct rainwater where you want it to go. Basically, you'd want to make the most of the rain that fell on your property if you weren't allowed to actively collect it. So passive collection would be your best bet, and that would entail smart plant choices. Putting plants where they grow best with the conditions that you have, and directing the rainwater with berming, if that's allowed, to the places that can use it.
Well, they've even gone as far as passing a landscape ordinance.
Oh,
that
wow!
Does not allow berming, and you can't plant anything two feet in front of your property line.
Wow! That doesn't. I'm wondering about the reasoning behind that.
I am too. Yeah.
I would be asking my local officials about the reasoning behind it, and I'd be arming myself with some other information about why this can be useful. These things.
Yeah, and local activism by talking to legislators can make a difference in these things. I saw it happen with the group in Tucson who wanted to have the curb cuts and take advantage of that water going down the street. And I know there are people working to allow at least small rain barrels in the state of Colorado. You know, not enough to divert water away from the streams and that sort of thing, but a little bit of water that they can use in their garden. So that might be your best approach in a situation like that.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, someone called and said they use fish in a rain barrel to deal with the mosquitoes.
Yeah, well, you know, if you find the right kind of fish, some fish are pickier than others. There's little native mosquito fish oftentimes that will tolerate pretty difficult conditions. So I would consider a rain barrel maybe a difficult condition for a fish. But if it works, it works.
Well, I have to tell you, Pam, we haven't gone through nearly everything that you've covered in your book by a long shot. But I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun. And much appreciate you. Oh, thank you so much for being with us today. Pam Pennick, and we have a link up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to her book. It's called The Water Saving Rain, The Water Saving Garden, How to Grow a Gorgeous Garden with a Lot Less Water. Fun talking with her today. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk to our home improvement expert about how changes to your home can impact your health. So looking forward to that. Stay with us, though, right now, because there's lots more in store on the Ideas Network.